Courting Disaster. Written by Lake Boys. Read by Frog Show Anon. Summary. When Sasha replays this conversation over in her head later that night, she'll fixate on the part that seems to imply that whatever is possessing Marcy isn't yet united. She believed, or at least wanted to believe, that Marcy was still in there, that she could be saved, that Sasha could be the one to save her. But now she has some proof of it. That is, if that thing is to be believed, which is its own can of worms to contemplate. So, Sasha will barely sleep, instead latching onto that thin thread of hope, ignoring all the rest. Within the flying Newtopian fortress, Sasha fails to find her footing beside its new, enigmatic ruler. The worst night Sasha had ever spent in Amphibia was probably the second night after she landed there. The first night had been bad, of course, locked up in Toad Tower, but she could still delude herself that it was all just a dream. By the second night, however, she knew it was real. She was trapped alone in a terrifying world with giant talking toads, and her best friends were out there somewhere, possibly in a worse situation than her. She had to find them. The second worst night Sasha had ever spent in Amphibia was definitely the one happening right now in Newtopia, if it could still be called Newtopia, that is. Flying Newtopian Fortress was probably a more accurate name for it. She thought she'd found one of her friends, the only other one that remained in Amphibia. But just like Newtopia, it seemed like another name would be needed.
You know, I considered putting you in the castle dungeon. I thought it might be, shall we say, nostalgic to your arrival in Amphibia. But I am nothing if not a gracious host.
A voice calls from the doorway, mockingly familiar.
Marcy broke her leg when she first got here, right? Why don't you let me dish some nostalgia out for you instead?
For all her bravado, Sasha makes no move toward the figure standing in the doorway, and they in turn make no acknowledgement of her comment.
These were my dear host's accommodations before they were given to me, though since you were such close friends, I'm sure you could determine that already.
Why am I here?
They finally step into the room.
As I said, I thought you would appreciate this more than the dungeon. Though, that can certainly change should you be uncooperative.
Then what do you want from me?
She keeps her voice even, as to not betray any of the fear or disgust she feels watching her friend's body be puppeted around the room. Her hands hang uselessly by her side, no Heron swords or hidden daggers in reach. Sasha hasn't been without weapons or armor since being brought to Toad Tower. Nostalgic is certainly one way to describe it. Helpless is another. Either way, she can't stand the feeling.
Your little rebellion has proven to be quite the thorn in my side. So consider this pruning the garden. Were I merely to kill you, you'd become a martyr to them. Your death would only spur them on to keep fighting, to keep meddling. But they know you live. And so long as they know that, they will waste time and resources trying to save you.
They'll keep fighting, with or without me, Sasha spits.
It certainly would be the most logical course of action. But if there is one thing I've gained insight on recently, thanks to my expanded consciousness, it is that humans and amphibians have a rather similar fallacy when it comes to following their hearts instead of their minds.
They pull open a drawer of the bedside table and retrieve an unmistakable Polaroid photo.
My host was the same.
Were I not confident that she is in possession of wit, I might have mistaken her for heart, given how ruled by it she was when it came to you and that other one. Several orange eyes examined the photo in their hand, while the rest remained trained on Sasha, as if trying to confirm she was indeed the girl in the picture. She can't say if she is anymore either. I wish to reach an understanding of her affection toward you. I believe it to be the key in our final steps toward a true, united consciousness. When Sasha replays this conversation over in her head later that night, she'll fixate on the part that seems to imply that whatever is possessing Marcy isn't yet united. She believed, or at least wanted to believe, that Marcy was still in there, that she could be saved, and that Sasha could be the one to save her. But now she has some proof of it. That is, if that thing is to be believed, which is its own can of worms to contemplate. So, Sasha will barely sleep, instead latching on to that thin thread of hope, ignoring all the rest. But that's what she'll do after. Right now, however, Sasha lunges, unsure if it's at the photo in their hand, at the helmet hiding her friend's face, at its neck to wrap her hands around. She simply can't keep standing there. And she doesn't stand for long, because as she reaches for the photo, the helmet, the neck, a flash of crackling red energy burns between them as a robotic guard makes its presence known from beyond the room. She reels back, narrowly avoiding the shot. A twisted smile, unsuited to Marcy's lips, greets her as her eyes jump between them and the guard. I hope foolhardy strategies such as that are not the extent of your so-called strength. This will be a pathetically short affair, if so. She grits her teeth. Give me back my swords, and I'll gladly show you the full extent of my strength. And here I thought you would hesitate to bring harm to my host. Though, I suppose hurting your friends is as much a specialty of yours as it was hers. Perhaps that is where your connection lies. I will have to review this later. In the meantime, I suggest you not squander the generosity I have shown you. They leave with their cloak flurrying behind them, and Sasha's eyes bore into their back, hoping that the cloak catches one of the many candles littering the walls. The worst dinner Sasha had ever been to was probably the one where her parents told her they were getting a divorce. It hadn't been a total surprise or anything. They'd been fighting a lot, and her mother had asked her, hypothetically, if she could only stay with one of her parents, who she would prefer to live with. The writing was on the wall. What had really been the final nail in the worst dinner coffin was that her parents had given her mac and cheese, her favorite as a kid, likely hoping to soften the blow, but it only made it so entangled with her memories of the whole ordeal that she just couldn't eat it anymore without her stomach turning. It was like the aversion to something you feel after getting food poisoning. And despite her best efforts to dispel it, her parents' poison relationship still lingers within her. The second worst dinner Sasha had ever been to was definitely this one right now, and it's got nothing to do with one of the many plates of food containing what she imagines is the amphibian equivalent to pasta and cheese. Be seated, a flat voice instructs her. She feels like she's back at home already. Do you even eat? She asks as she pulls out a chair opposite of them.
I've been without form for a millennium, so I'm taking the opportunity to reestablish my connection with taste. But aside from that, my host does require nutrition.
Her name is Marcy.
That girl is gone. However, while you remain in my company, you may refer to me as Darcy.
Oh. Frog, is she meant to be Keira Knightley? How did that movie end again? They got married, right? So that was it then. She's been transported to a world of talking toads so she can act out the worst mashup of Bride of Frankenstein and Pride and Prejudice ever known to man. Cool. I'm not calling you that.
I'm doing this as a favor to you. I am the true lord of this castle, after all, and an honored guest such as yourself is expected to address me as such. But should my name prove too troublesome for you, then please do use the title. The sooner you accept it, the better, actually.
She stabs her fork into a roasted mantis leg. You're going to have to start serving better appetizers if you want that, buddy. The conversation, if it could be called that, lulls as they eat in silence. Had Sasha not had years of experience with painfully quiet dinners, then the whole affair might be considered awkward. However, the familiarity of it all allows her to retreat into her own head for a time as she tries to process what exactly she's doing here. She's here for Marcy, of course, even if the circumstances that led them to finally being brought back together are less than ideal. But she's also here because whatever has a hold of Marcy right now doesn't understand her or Anne enough to bring Marcy in line. So as long as they don't understand hers and Marcy's relationship, then they should both be safe. Theoretically, at least. But Sasha can work with that, because ever since they all came to Amphibia, she's pretty much had to come to terms with the fact that she didn't understand any of their relationships either.
Why the right hand?
Sasha stares at her right hand, fork gripped tight. As opposed to the left?
As opposed to the leader of the toads. I reviewed the reports of your time in Toad Tower. Your rise and... fall, that is. A pity about the frogs, but you at least demonstrated some interesting maneuvers. If you'd seized power from the start, perhaps that outcome would not have been so...
They gesture at her as if she is the obvious embodiment of disaster, which she wasn't really about to fight them on, but she's also not the one LARPing as an axolotl. Pot me kettle. Maneuvers?
Undermining the captain while in captivity to lessen the available guards. Using false praise to motivate expendable troops. Using your lesser position to make personal requests. Though, truth be told, your retraining of the chefs to create familiar human dishes will probably be your most lasting effect. We picked up a few of them several weeks back.
Looking at the table spread now, it was pretty similar to what she'd had the toads cook for her back at the tower. Burgers, pizzas, fried chicken, or whatever passed for chicken over here.
So, is it to your liking?
The thing is, despite feeling like she was living like a queen back then, she was only able to teach them what she actually knew how to cook herself. And what she knew didn't hold a handle to what Anne's restaurant-owning family could cook. It's no Tai Go, but no one could compare to that, huh? Sasha delights in their frown. A chair scraping against the marble flooring signals the end of their meal as her host stands from the table. She follows them as they make their way to the door and nearly trips over her own feet when they abruptly stop and turn to face her. They hold out their hand to her. We are not holding hands, she states flatly.
The knife, they clarify.
I don't know what... Green sparks flash from their palm as a ring of light flickers around the wrist piece of their armor.
Do not make me repeat myself.
She thought them arrogant enough to walk around unarmed while surrounded by their robot guards and sealed in armor. She feels stupid for not considering that the armor was a weapon, too. It already had Marcy at knife point. Of course it would share her the same courtesy. She pulls the table knife from her belt and drops it into their hand.
Good. A knight would be useless if they could not follow simple orders from their lord.
I'm first lieutenant to Captain Grime. I'm no knight.
Perhaps we ought to have a knighting ceremony, then. Let me rest a sword by either side of your neck while you swear loyalty. I may even consider returning your heron blades.
I'd sooner marry a toad. They laugh and spin the table knife idly in their hands, a trick Sasha had witnessed Marcy do 1,000 times with a pencil in the midst of some study session or another.
She wants to snatch it back and jam it into one of the too many orange eyes, crack open the helmet, and pull her friend out. She wants to drag her back to the Boonchoy's kitchen table to finish a mounting pile of homework, surrounded by the smells of a delicious meal to come when they're finally done.
Till next time, then, Lieutenant.
The first time Sasha played Flipboard was in Wartwood, about 10 minutes after Marcy had loudly proclaimed,
"You've never played Flipboard?"
She'd then rush around the planter's wagon they'd been catching up in, opening doors and hatches until she'd finally pulled a box out from underneath the bed and set it down in front of Sasha.
"Marcy, you were telling me about the first temple you went to. Why are you explaining toad chess to me?"
"This isn't toad chess, Sash. Well, actually, there are some base similarities, but that's besides the point. You'll understand way more about the temple if you understand the game. Plus, it's an Amphibian classic. You gotta try it at least once."
"Yeah, that's what Grime said about Bog Grog, but you don't see me drinking it, do you?"
"Come on, Sasha, please. For me?"
Marcy had hit her with her most potent puppy dog eyes, which Sasha liked to think have no effect on her. And it's true to a degree, because it's less about the eyes and more about the way Marcy's whole face lit up when she finally agreed to play.
"Ugh, fine."
Sasha did not, of course, win that match, but the pieces on the board had at least served Marcy well in her retelling of the first temple's trials. The second time Sasha plays Flipboard is in a flying Newtopian fortress, about 10 minutes after the puppeteer, as Sasha internally titles them, had stated,
"You've never had the chance to play Flipboard, have you? I can't imagine the toads are particularly rigorous in training their mental dexterity."
"Can't say I ever played toad chess with them, no."
This is not a lie. She'd played one game with Marcy, not any of the toads, because they weren't total nerds, unlike the gangly tin man in front of her.
"Then allow me to grant you the honor of playing against Amphibia's only grandmaster."
"Only one, huh?"
"None can compare to my intellect. They cannot share a title with one such as myself."
"Does it hurt when your huge head rubs against the helmet?"
Sasha gives them a sweet smile.
"Only so much as your scarred cheek must sting with your failures."
Darcy smiles back as they finish setting up the pieces on the board.
"You know, if you want to play games, then she brought her Switch with her. It's gotta be around here somewhere."
"Flipboard has survived for ages past when this land was rich with knowledge and possibility. That it is still here while all else has rotted to such a miserable state is a testament to its worth."
"Yeah, no, I bet you just suck at Luigi card."
Darcy says nothing, but gestures at the white pieces now lined up neatly in front of her. She has the opening move.
"How does some boring old board game manage to survive this long, but you guys apparently forgot you had robots?"
A white pawn moves in place.
"As you are aware, our primary power source was stolen by another. Your arrival heralded its return."
A black pawn mirrors the white.
"So what, you just relied on the box for everything? Weren't you guys meant to be super smart? There are robots on Earth. People make those without magic."
"Technical knowledge is not the issue. Production is. If you've no fuel in the furnace, then a blacksmith can temper no blades."
"Then you should have taught the blacksmiths how to maintain the furnace instead of just making blades."
"No, I believe the issue was with production. Had we the resources, we could have enacted countermeasures to secure the box sooner than we did. I will not let that so-called king lead us to failure again, though.
We have taken appropriate steps to secure the resources we will need for the future.
Is that what you're calling it? Stripping amphibia of all its life is securing resources?
These amphibians were given every chance to prove themselves worthy in the last 1,000 years, and all they have done is prove themselves worthless frogs and toads. Their lives do not matter. The least they can do is provide something useful for a greater generation.
You taught them to rely on one form of magical power, and once it was gone, you all acted shocked they didn't instantly invent electricity.
Darcy taps her king with their knight before knocking it over.
Checkmate.
That's the wrong game.
For your benefit, Lieutenant, since it has been some time since your last game.
They give her a knowing smile as they stand to leave.
Thank you for the match. I was able to collect some valuable data today.
Sasha knows she could sit and look at the board all day and still not know what had gone wrong, what move she should have made instead. This was never her game. The victor looks past the board and right at her.
I believe there is truth to your words. I was indeed misguided to believe those under me would be able to achieve anything without the power I provide. I will not make that mistake again. So that the chosen few below me may flourish, my rule will be absolute and uninterrupted.
Reigning through total control. It's a strategy Sasha is all too familiar with. She hopes it crushes them like it did her. The biggest contradiction about Marcy Wu, at least in Sasha's mind, was that 90% of the time she was blissfully unaware of her surroundings, and yet somehow, if asked, she always knew exactly where she was, no matter how far off course she'd gotten. Maybe it was something to do with her love of maps. She'd always be drawing dungeon layouts in the back of her math books, planning some encounter or another for their Creatures in Caverns game that Sasha would only half pay attention to. For Sasha and Anne, it had meant that the quickest way to meet up with Marcy was to ask where she was and hope she stuck to the general area by the time they showed up. In the fortress, she no longer has to look for Marcy. Every day, they seek her out, no matter what room of the castle she occupies. Even now, standing by an open window thousands of feet above the ground, while looking at untouched snow on passing mountaintops, they find her.
That mountain is rich in coal. It's a primitive fuel source, but a useful one, nonetheless.
Darcy comes to stand beside her, hands joined together behind their back in their typical position of formality.
How do you get to it through all the snow? Sasha ventures.
You blow off the top of the mountain.
That seems a bit extreme.
It is a form of mining commonly used on Earth, Darcy informs her.
Just because Earth does something doesn't make it smart. An easy smile spreads across Darcy's face.
Of that, we are in agreement. I look forward to bringing enlightenment to your planet.
Do you have a quota of ominous lines you have to say each day? Have you reached it yet? Or should I expect more?
You would do well to remember who you are addressing.
The smile remains, though some of the surrounding eyes narrow.
How could I ever forget someone who named themselves after a Jane Austen character?
Sasha continues to jab at them despite the warning.
Every day I come to you in hopes of gaining greater understanding of my host's admiration towards you, and every day you fail to demonstrate a single trait worthy of such attention. I'm beginning to hypothesize her attraction to you was merely physical.
Do you need me to teach you how to call a girl pretty like a normal person?
I am not a normal person.
Of that, we're in agreement, she parrots back.
It must be by design that Sasha has yet to see another person besides Darcy and herself. Of the area she is free to explore,
The walls are always lined with robotic guards. She wonders if Darcy can see through their eyes, if she's being watched by them even when their physical presence isn't with her. It's probably her own paranoia. Probably. Where is everyone, anyway?
You needn't speak to anyone other than myself, Darcy states in lieu of answering.
Their quota of ominous lines had not, in fact, been met, apparently. Sasha should honestly stop expecting anything less from Darcy by this point, much like how she should stop expecting Darcy to leave her in peace when they have a chance to sing their own praises over their apparent intellect.
Your wordsmithing may have little effect on me, dear Lieutenant, but I cannot deny you have an ability to bend others to your favor with charisma alone. It is an effective strategy when dealing with the lesser minds of amphibians. Of that, I'll give you my praise. But for that very reason, I have made sure your guards are not able to be swayed.
And here I thought I had no worthy traits, she drawls.
Were that truly the case, I would have merely locked you in the dungeon a week ago.
Careful. That almost sounded like a compliment. The robots might start thinking they lost a fellow heartless comrade. Revolt'll be in the air by morning.
Fancy yourself a maiden of the revolution again? And here I thought only my host liked to live out delusions of grandeur. Come now, Waybright. I understand you humans like to believe that attempting something a third time increases the chances of its success, but this is becoming sad.
Sasha holds her tongue for a moment. She's constantly second-guessing where the line between cutting remarks stops and frogbot laser begins. Their banter is worryingly easy, yet infinitely exhausting. She's worthless to them one moment and praised another. An oddity and a treasure so long as she holds a mystery worth solving. Everything about the two of them is a contradiction. Having seemingly grown bored of the view below, Darcy turns away.
If you continue to stand here, you are likely to grow ill. Follow me.
Maybe that's my plan. I'll sneeze on you and you get sick too. Mercy's terrible at handling colds. She doesn't make a move to follow them, ever the rebel.
Waybright, we have the means to overcome death itself. The common cold is trivial. Now follow. This is not a discussion.
She hears the metal scraping of a frogbot head turn her way. Ah, so that's where the line stops today, it seems. She wonders briefly what would happen if she let the worst come to pass. If Darcy and the king would bring her back the same way they brought Mercy back, or if she'd be considered a waste of resources. If she wants to be any good to Mercy, then it's best she not find out. So she follows, feeling no better than a dog at heel. The first time Sasha kissed Marcy was after Tina Kiley's birthday party, and it hadn't even counted. They'd been walking home, having already dropped Anne off along the way, when Sasha had started to tease Marcy over how fast she'd found an excuse to leave the room when Tina had suggested a game of spin the bottle. She ignored the fact that she and Anne had used Marcy's absence as a means to skip the game, over the pretense of protecting Tina's house from an unsupervised Marcy. Sasha was just looking out for her friends, after all.
No one there you want to kiss? Such high standards, Miss Wu. That's not... You know what I mean, though. It's a first kiss. It's meant to be important. Not just some random classmate rotating a bottle that chooses for me.
I think you're making this out to be a way bigger deal than it actually is.
Dude, if it wasn't a big deal, then it wouldn't be in every movie or manga or TV show. True love's kiss is a readily documented trope, Sasha.
Okay, so first of all, a first kiss and true love's kiss are totally different things.
They can happen at the same time, and they often do. Readily documented trope.
Second of all, Sasha continued, ignoring Marcy's lecture. Last time I checked, you're not under some sleeping curse waiting for a hero to wake you up, so you don't need true love's anything. Marcy opened her mouth to protest again, but Sasha lifted her hand up and carried on with her list.
And finally, it's been the bottle, Marmar.
It doesn't even count as a proper kiss.
Since when hasn't it counted?
Since, like, forever. Look.
She rests her hand on Marcy's cheek and quickly dips down to bring their lips together.
See? And now you don't have to worry when a proper one happens.
Huh.
Marcy gives her a look that normally only crosses her face the moment she's handed the solution to a puzzle in one of her games that's actually been giving her trouble. Sasha can practically hear the gears in Marcy's brain begin to whirl. She wants to throw a wrench in it.
Come on.
She spins on her heels and doesn't look back all the way home. The second time Sasha kissed Marcy hadn't counted either. Mostly because it doesn't work. Not like how she hoped it would, if she ever truly believed it would in the first place. She once again rests her hand on Marcy's cheek, one of the few reminders that Marcy is still in there somewhere, encased in black armor. Marcy's hand, the only other remaining piece of herself not encased, is puppeted to wrap around Sasha's neck. It rests without any pressure, like a dog hesitating to bite. In the stories, it's always true love's kiss that breaks the spell, yeah? It's less of a kiss so much as it's their lips, dry and slightly chapped, pressed together for a moment. When they come apart, there are only two orange eyes looking back at her.
This was no work of magic, Sash.
The hand at Sasha's throat slides down and rests on her chest, heavier than any chainmail she's ever worn. You never know. Maybe I just don't have enough heart. That was always Anne's thing, I guess. A hollow laugh escapes her. Maybe she'll have a better go at it. Whatever spell they'd managed to cast breaks as more orange eyes slowly open upon the helmet.
I've no need for a heart.
A distorted voice rings out as an unnatural amount of eyes pin her in place.
Not while I have strength.
If Sasha is ever lucky enough to kiss Marcy again, she's going to make it count. The last time Sasha had stood in Utopia's throne room, Marcy had all but tilted her whole world on its axis. She struggled to find her footing ever since. She's made a good go of it, at least she hopes she has, at being a better person, a person that deserves the friends she somehow managed to keep until that point. She listens now, to the toads and the frogs, and not just to pick out information that'll be helpful for some scheme or another. She thinks she'd started to understand what Anne saw in it all, and it'd only make her fight harder to protect it. This time in the throne room, as Darcy guides her towards the balcony and begins their speech, she finds it hard to really listen, too distracted by the feeling that her world is about to tilt again. She tries to prepare herself, to move with it, to slide closer to the edge, to be ready for the fall.
So, how about it? With my mind and your strength, we could rule the very stars.
There's no way she could be ready for it.
She almost laughs, or cries. It's hard to tell them apart these days. She certainly feels something clawing at her throat.
She wonders what she'd have done if Marcy had asked her the same thing a few months ago, before they'd all stepped into this throne room and handed over the box to the king. How would this have played out if she knew what Marcy wanted from the start? If Marcy knew she wanted the same? They'd had different reasons, but they'd been trying to achieve the same thing. They both just wanted the three of them together, always. But it isn't Marcy who's asking, and Sasha's finally having to accept that as long as she's up here without a plan, without weapons, without support, it's never going to be Marcy asking.
Would I have to change my name to Sasha Waydark?
Darcy's mouth twitches slightly before Sasha's arm erupts in pain. Green flashes of electricity jump around her as she crumbles to the floor. She smiles, despite herself.
She'd made them self-conscious about the stupid name. A small victory.
Sorry, Hotshot. There are only two people I'd conquer the stars for, and they already turned me down.
She smiles through gritted teeth, shielding her arm against her chest.
That was the other. My host did not give a response.
We're sort of a package deal, dude. All or nothing.
Then it would appear you are nothing, Sasha Waybright.
10 eyes bore down on her.
What a disappointing conclusion.
She pushes herself up against the balcony railing. If she's honest with herself, which is another thing she's been trying to be but knows she's fumbling most of the time, Sasha had always wanted to be the hero of the story. She wanted to lead a rebellion, to sweep in and save her best friend, to defeat the evil king, to prove she was someone who deserved Anne or die trying. She'd always wanted to be a protector, even as a kid. She wishes she could pinpoint when it changed from protecting others to just protecting herself, her position at the top, the suffocating status quo of her relationship with Marcy and Anne. And maybe that's just it. She keeps falling back into old habits, thinking she can take on the world with a silver tongue and an iron grip, when she's been facing something that doesn't care for her words and has left her hands empty of any blade. Hey, Darcy? She vaults over the railing and twists to face them on the balcony's edge. Darcy unfolds her arms from behind their back as they step towards her, hands twitching in uncertainty. It's the first time she's ever seen them unsure in their movements. The world begins to tilt. I think I'm better off without you. She falls. The strangest thing Anne had to get used to when she first arrived in Amphibia was the noise, or the lack thereof. Well, okay, maybe it's not the strangest thing, given that she's transported to a world of talking frogs, but once she settled in with the planters and vaguely used to the food, she gets to really take in that she's out in the sticks. It's alive in such a different way to how a city makes its life known. Distant hums of traffic are replaced with the creaks of tree branches, the calls of crickets and cicadas. She can't say if she favors one over the other, just that she's glad she's experienced both. The strangest thing Anne had to get used to when she arrived in Amphibia the second time was the noise, or just how much of it there was. War against a robot army wasn't a quiet affair, as it turns out. Wardwood is alive with revolt, and that sounds like a lot of frogs, toads, and newts running around, giving out orders, passing around weapons. So she shouldn't be surprised when she hears, rather than sees, something fly overhead with all the sounds that used to only belong in her home, where airplanes and helicopters were a given, but now make themselves known in Amphibia thanks to the king's flying frogbot army.
Anne, come on! It might have good parts for Frobo!
Polly pulls her in the direction of the forest where a trail of black smoke signals their prize. It isn't long before they find the wreckage of the frogbot, buried face down in a clearing. The head is damaged, with part of its right side missing. The arms look charred, as if it had overused its jet propulsion in flight, or so Polly muses. Anne doesn't know a teaspoon as much about them as Polly does these days. What she does know is tracking, though, and there are tracks leading away from it, with boots big enough to be from a newt, or...
Polly, I'm gonna look around. Shout if you see anything, all right? Aye, aye.
Polly salutes without looking up from her salvage. She follows the tracks, their shape and size matching her own, and quietly thinks, please, please, please. Anne doesn't know what she's pleading for, if it's to find someone or not, a friend or a foe. She hears it before she sees it. A laugh, and then, girl, you are a mess.
When Anne pushes past the bushes, she finally sees her, kneeling down by the side of a riverbank. The captain of the cheerleaders, top scorer in Super Dance Fusion, First Lieutenant Captain Grime, and leader of the Amphibian Rebellion, Sasha Waybright. Also apparently someone who talks to their reflection now. Sasha? Sasha twists around suddenly to face her, and Anne has to agree that Sasha was right, because of course Sasha still has to be right about something. She's a total mess. Dark, sunken eyes, hair windblown and free from its usual ponytail, arms sporting a nasty red marking that spread out like a spider web.
Anne?
Neither of them move for a moment. The sounds of the forest fill the air between, and suddenly Sasha is scrambling to her feet and Anne is nearly tripping over her own, racing towards each other before colliding into a mess of arms holding one another in vice grips. Anne breaks the silence with an,
"I'm sorry." What are you even apologizing for? That's my job.
Sasha pulls back in disbelief.
For taking so long. I was coming for you. For you and Marcy both, I swear, Sasha.
Her voice cracks a bit, desperately. Sasha just gives her a sad smile.
That one isn't on you, Anne. I mean, I'm the reason you were sent back in the first place.
I didn't mean coming back to Amphibia. I mean, yes, that was it too, but we just got back, but we heard, obviously, everyone told us about... There's a plan. Was a plan. I was coming for you both in the castle. We all were.
The sad smile on Sasha's lips slides away into a frown as she shakes her head.
Then, I'm sorry too. I could have tried to get out sooner. I just wanted to save her, you know? I wanted to be the hero for once.
Her voice strains, and she rests her head on Anne's shoulder, face hidden from view. I'm bad at playing the hero.
No, you're bad at being the villain. Being the hero always came naturally. You shouldn't fight it.
See that? That's a hero talk right there. Sasha's voice comes out muffled from her shoulder.
That's just me talking, Sash.
She lifts her head, eyes a little redder than before. It is, isn't it? Sorry it took me so long to listen, to actually hear what you've been telling me. Anne's not about to pretend that one apology makes up for everything Sasha had done in the past, but it's a start. She doesn't want to start over. They tried that once and failed pretty miserably at it. She just wants to start a new chapter. Something that acknowledges everything that came before, but lets them keep going beyond it. But mostly, she wants them off the floor of this forest and for someone to look at Sasha's arm. They can start writing their new chapter after that. So she pulls Sasha to her feet and lets her hook her good arm around her shoulder as they make their way back. When we get home, the three of us are gonna have a good long talk about honesty and stuff, okay?
Yeah, okay. I can do that.
And I'm pretty sure she can too.
She's going to have to, because I'm not going back without you both. We're sort of a package deal, dude.
Sasha stares at her with wide eyes for a moment before barking out a laugh. She finally looks unburdened, and Anne would say it's the prettiest she'd ever seen Sasha if she weren't so bewildered by the outburst.
What? Nothing. It's nothing. I'm not laughing at you. You're right. I'm glad, is all.
If you're sure.
I am. Now, come on. Let's get out of here. We've got a king to defeat and a girl to save.
The end. Thanks for listening.